This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. At this point, everybody knows what happened to U.S. Airways Flight 1549 last January 15th. Shortly after takeoff from LaGuardia Airport in New York, the Airbus A320 ran into a flock of geese, lost power to both engines, and a cool, collected pilot named Chesley Sullenberger glided the plane toward the Hudson River and set it down perfectly in those frigid waters. Rescue boats raced out and brought all 150 passengers and five crew safely to shore. In a new book, William Longavisha argues that along with Sully Sullenberger, we need to thank someone else for the miracle on the Hudson, a French test and fighter pilot named Bernard Ziegler, who went on to design an airliner so easy to fly it is almost pilot-proof. He writes that Ziegler was so despised within the French Pilots Union that he received death threats, and 25 years later, it's possible that Longavisha's argument will not be much more popular among their American brethren. So, pilots, if you'd like to challenge William Longavisha's account of the miracle on the Hudson, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, 10 controversial moments from 40 years of Sesame Street. Only 10. Email us yours. The address again is talk@npr.org. But first, William Longavisha, the international editor at Vanity Fair. His new book is titled Fly by Wire, and he joins us from a studio on the campus of the University of California at Davis. Nice to have you back on the program.
Thanks for having me.
And I have to point out at first that you credit Sully Sullenberger as an exceptional pilot who performed brilliantly on that day.
Absolutely. He performed brilliantly. I mean, it was a great job of flying, high concentration. What he really did was shed distraction in the most admirable way, and he flew the airplane perfectly. To go back to how you introduced this segment, I kind of disagree with you. I don't believe that this book is saying that the A320 is pilot-proof. That was sort of the bombastic conceit of Bernard Ziegler, the man who designed this revolutionary fly-by-wire airplane. He thought that he could make an airplane that was essentially crash-proof, and he was identifying in a bombastic way pilots as being the weak link. Now, he realizes after many years that a lot of hubris was involved in his attitude, and certainly his language was inflammatory. This book does not take Bernard Ziegler's side, but admires the creation, if not the philosophy behind it, of this airplane.
Well, we'll get to that in a moment, but you describe the airplane as a work of genius.
Absolutely. It's a work of genius. I mean, Ziegler was working on the basis of other research and that had been done and airplanes that had been built, military airplanes in the United States, the F-16, fly-by-wire, which is the use of computers to sort of permanently on computers in a semi-robotic fashion, is actually the creation of experiments done at NASA in the late 50s and early 60s. So he was not inventing the wheel, but he had the courage, intellectual courage, to proceed forward with this design in a civilian airliner, and he had very interesting reasons for doing it. The result was and is something like a magic carpet. I mean, this is a highly, highly unusual airplane and is to be admired.
Highly, highly unusual. In fact, you describe it as the first airplane, again, the F-16s and those other military aircraft accepted, that is fundamentally different from the Wright Flyer.
Right. The characteristics, if you use computers, as Ziegler did and fly-by-wire airplanes do, you can sort of, within the limits of physics and aerodynamic realities, you can create handling characteristics that are sort of dreamlike in their qualities. And a normal airplane, you really can't do that. Now, normal airplanes, let's say a Boeing 737 or every other conventional airplane, actually fly very well also. So it's not that these are tremendously tricky or nasty machines that are being produced without fly-by-wire. But with fly-by-wire, Ziegler went in and ironed out the wrinkles of handling characteristics and thereby reducing the workload on the pilots enormously in sort of the mundane housekeeping chores of flight control. And that's really what he was trying to do in addition to that. And this is where it really got to be controversial. He built protections into the system so that at the edges of performance, where most airline pilots, I mean the huge majority of airline pilots, will never see this, where at the edges of flight performance, the airplane will actively intervene and will override the pilot. Now, that is a very controversial thing to do. And it can be argued in both ways, whether this is right or wrong. I do not take a position on it in this book. I'm not a proponent of, you know, of that level, nor am I an opponent of it. I find it interesting from a kind of design philosophical point of view. I mean, that's about the extent of it.
Mm-hmm. We'll get into that more as we go along. But nevertheless, it also leads to something. You questioned Bernard Ziegler when you talked to him about why, if this aircraft was such a great departure, the safety records of Boeing's aircraft are just about the same as Airbus's.
Aha, yeah, that's really the paradox, isn't it? I mean, it's really quite amusing, and all this effort, and in fact, the safety record of the A320 or the Airbus fly-by-wire airplanes is not any better than those of conventional airplanes. So, again, hubris. I mean, he really was fooling himself to think that that he could create a crash-proof airplane. There never has been one, and there never will be one. And pilots are required, of course, to be in the cockpit to keep airplanes from crashing. And again, another paradox, most crashes that do occur, and there are very few, are the result of pilot error. Okay, so again, paradox.
Mm-hmm. And how did, we'll get into more about that too, but nevertheless, how did the safety characteristics of the A320, the fly-by-wire design, play into the accident, the miracle on the Hudson?
That's a very difficult question to answer honestly. I mean, I think that we can. Sullenberger and Skiles both were extremely competent.
Skiles, the co-pilot,
The co-pilot, yeah, extremely competent pilots. As most airline pilots are. I mean, these people live and breathe airplanes year in and year out. They know the machines. They understand the sky and flying to an extent that the public cannot even imagine. So would this accident have been so successful had Sullenberger and Skiles been in a conventional airplane like a Boeing 737? I think so. I mean, I have no reason to believe that they would not have performed as well in a measurable sense. So the effect of fly-by-wire on this particular story is not directly that very simple thing. Oh, they didn't crash because of fly-by-wire. It has to do with, if you really want to understand what was going on in the cockpit, on one level, it simply has to do with an understanding of the maneuvers that were being made and of the workloads and of the decisions that were being made on a minute level of technology, the interface between pilot and control surfaces, et cetera. The book does go into that. And I think in a more fundamental sense, and what really interested me about this particular story, which superficially, let's face it, is not very interesting. It's not very deep. Actually, it becomes deep in various ways, like many things do when you really look at them. One of the aspects of it is that the symbolism, the political symbolism around the fly-by-wire system, however it was operative or not operative during this glide as part of the story, the symbolism was very much there. And it played out silently, which is always interesting when things are not being said, you know. And what was not being said was that this was not a normal airplane and that many people were airline pilots have historically been opposed to it, not so much in the United States, largely in Europe, and especially, again, another paradox, in France, where the airplane really originated. But the opposition to this airplane is a really interesting thing, which takes us deep into the airline profession and the enormous troubles that it has encountered over the last 30 or 40 years. I mean, to be an airline pilot is increasingly a pretty rough deal. And the fly-by-wire airplane coming in the late 70s and early 80s was sort of like sticking a finger in the wound. And the wound was caused by other things. But so it became an interesting story because of that, not because of the nature of the intervention of the fly-by-wire system during the glide.
Another paradox, you say, the pilot business has become pretty difficult in the last several decades, 20 years in particular, between the deregulation of the airlines and loss of salary cutbacks and loss of pensions and any number of other things. Yet you also point out that while much of the glamour and excitement and interest has gone out of the job, there's no shortage of people lining up to do it.
That's right. I mean, people don't become pilots. I maybe years past, people became pilots because they thought it was glamorous. I mean, I think up close, it never really was. I mean, I don't think many pilots ever really believed it, even during the glamour days of the 50s or before. Maybe in the 20s they did, and they were regularly dying for that glamour back then in 27, 28, 29, early airmail, early airlines. But, you know, no, pilots aren't pursuing glamour, and they're not really pursuing money either. I mean, it's, yeah, you take the money if it's there. The money's not there anymore. Now it's a sort of modest middle-class income is the best you can expect. But that's not, you know, not everybody is motivated by money, even in America. And, you know, the pilots are in that category. They're more like, you could say, an artist who's motivated by doing art, or for that matter, maybe a radio broadcaster who's motivated by what motivates you. I'm pretty sure it's not the money. So to say that, and this came up in the story, I mean, to say that because pilots are making less money now, the public is therefore less safe is a highly questionable assertion. Of course, if it went on for a long time and people were making only sort of poverty wages, then you would find a negative selection going on. But we're not at that stage. I mean, now, on the other hand, somebody like Sullenberger, somebody like Skiles, these guys signed on for a different deal. And it's been a very rough ride. It is very sad and regrettable that incomes have been cut the way they have, and it's dramatic. So it's not something to be applauded, but I think we can avoid tying that trend to any kind of particular concern about increasing danger for the flying public.
We're talking with William Longavisha. His new book is called Fly By Wire, The Geese, The Glide, The Miracle on the Hudson. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. William Longavisha is a distinguished journalist. He is also a pilot and the son of a pilot, background that gives him a unique perspective for his new book, Fly By Wire, about the accident that's come to be known as the Miracle on the Hudson. The National Transportation Safety Board, the NTSB, spent 6 months dissecting the accident. You can read all about that in an excerpt from the book on our website at npr.org. We want to hear from pilots today. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on that website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And let's start with Jacob. Jacob with us from Boston.
Hey, good afternoon. I like the show very much.
Thank you.
I also like Mr. Langevish's work and also that of his father. That's quite a seminal text for flyers. I'd like to say one thing first about the miracle on the Hudson, as it were. I haven't flown that particular plane. I have ridden in it quite a bit, commuting back and forth to work. And it's my belief that the fly-by-wire system really wouldn't have been any help or hindrance in that situation. That's the type of situation that the computers can't really account for or know what's going on. And Captain Sullenberger would have made very direct, normal control inputs to handle that emergency. What saved the day there was really his quick action and the subtleties of his basically a sleight of hand to be able to pull that off.
I'm not sure William Longavisha takes issue with that.
No, I mean, the point here is that, look, of course, I mean, pilots are making the important decisions, and what was important here were the decisions. I mean, this is to go for the Hudson, to shed distractions, to concentrate intensely. And to make the right choices. And there's no computer, no fly-by-wire system that's going to do that. I mean, that is the number one job of the pilot, is to make the right decisions at the right time. And pilots do this day in and day out on a very regular basis. I mean, this is the nature of the job. So absolutely. As far as, normal control motions, now this gets very technical, but you kind of can't do that in an A320 because the A320 is so weird, actually, in the way it handles. And beautiful. I mean, I don't mean weird in a bad way. For me, it's something of great beauty. But you just can't do, in terms of the interface between your hand and the control surfaces in an airplane like that, you don't do as you do in the 737. You simply can't. The airplane doesn't work that way, so to speak. So what the effect of that was on this particular glide, probably not very much. I mean, it's just an airplane that handles in a different way and in a better way. I think if you wanted to stretch it into the kind of realm of pure speculation, you could say that in a normal airplane, a certain percentage of the pilot's brain is occupied with the housekeeping chores of simple flight control. I mean, this is why, I mean, as pilots, we all know we're sort of more stupid when we're flying than when we're not. It can be hard to make little calculations and things like that if you're hand-flying an airplane, especially if you're, if you're in the weather. Therefore, those problems don't really come up with the A320. It handles most of the housekeeping chores, the tedious little things that we don't even notice when we're flying a normal airplane, but are definitely there. So clearly, I mean, I think you could make a highly speculative argument that cognitive abilities increase, it's easier to fly, to calculate, do simple arithmetic if you're flying a fly-by-wire airplane by hand than if you're flying a conventional airplane. Of course, most of the time, all these airplanes are on autopilot anyway, so it really doesn't come up. It came up during the glide. The ability to think is, I think, we could make an argument, and I don't know if it's a correct argument. It was probably a little bit easier to think during that glide in the Airbus because of the fly-by-wire system. Beyond that, I wouldn't want to go. And as far as flight envelope protections, which is the other thing, the extreme, at the very end of the glide, right above the water, during the what's known as the flare that any pilot knows about, raising the nose and gentling the descent, normal thing for landing, as Sullenberger flared over this very difficult glassy surface without good perspective available to him, without really accurate depth perception normally available on a runway, the airplane came to its aerodynamic limits. It did this so good with Sullenberger as a pilot that he actually didn't get to the limits until just before the touchdown. But, in fact, the data shows that the fly-by-wire envelope protection did kick in, alpha protection. And it came in so late because of the quality of Sullenberger as a pilot that it probably didn't matter. I mean, had it not kicked in, the airplane would have touched down maybe a little bit harder than it did, but probably everyone would have survived. I mean, at that point, the story was sort of written. Mm-hmm. However, objectively speaking, yes, actually, he went to and engaged in the flight envelope protections, which normally, one would never do.
Okay. Jacob, thanks for the call. Let's see. We go next to Don. Don's calling from St. Louis.
Yes. Good afternoon. You kind of answered the question that I was going to ask already. I was just wondering if, since both engines were lost due to the bird strike, if he had electrical power or not, and if so, if the fly-by-wire was still working, and it sounds like it was. So my question was going to be, was it Sullenberger's piloting skills or the fly-by-wire? And it sounds like you kind of already answered that. And if I could, though, I remember when the Airbus first came out, they rolled it out at the Paris Air Show, and it crashed and burned. I never really followed up on exactly why that happened, but did the pilots leave too much of that? I think they were doing a go-around, and they went into the forest adjacent to the airport. Did they leave too much of the, wait too late to override the computer, or what happened in that situation?
A very famous accident. I mean, and let's just, step aside from tragedy. There were people who were killed. A few people in that airplane were killed. It was not in Paris. It was on the border with Switzerland. But it was just a few weeks. I think it was Airbus A320 number 8 off the production line. I mean, it was brand new. And here Ziegler had built this airplane. This book has got that story in full. Ziegler had built this airplane, which he really believed could not be crashed. And by God, they had a senior Air France captain with a bunch of tourists in the back on a kind of a promotion. promotional flight, and he was doing a low pass at an air show, and he took that airplane into the protections, and he relied on it. So he did this very, very slow, very low, very show-off low pass in front of a crowd. And the simple matter is, in the end, he was slow on advancing the throttles. It takes, 5 seconds, 6 seconds for power to go from flight idle up to maximum thrust. And you can just count it. You can just count those. And he just didn't. He was so slow and so low that he blew the tree level and high angle of attack and high drag. And the airplane does not defy physics. So it was totally controllable. He couldn't stall it. He brought the stick full back. And normally an airplane, you can't just hold the stick full back. He had that stick buried. And the fly-by-wire protections were running just as Ziegler had anticipated. It worked perfectly. The airplane worked perfectly. But Ziegler was not anticipating a pilot who would do such a strange and stupid thing. And, of course, they crashed. Hmm. It was a very interesting lesson. Oh, total pilot air, yeah. Of course. Yeah.
Thanks, Don. Email from Jane in Portland, Oregon. What about the Airbus that just fell out of the sky into the Atlantic because the pitot tubes sent contradictory readings? This is a case where the plane on autopilot just went on and on with the pilots oblivious to the trouble that was befalling them until it was too late. I'm an old-school daughter of the Boeing company. Feel more comfortable when my pilots are more in the loop. Surely what happened on the way from Rio to Paris is a chilling object lesson?
It may or may not be. In fact, I mean, this description of what happened is far too precise. We really don't know at this stage what happened. It remains one of the great mysteries. It is simply not known. And the various conceivable pitot tube related or non-pitot tube related failures in scenarios pertaining to the specific fly-by-wire system in that airplane don't lead to, by any stretch of the imagination, what little we know about what happened to that airplane. This is a great mystery. Now, as I say in the book, it may prove to have been a failure of the fly-by-wire system. It may prove not to have been, but it may well prove, if ever we know, it may prove. But even so, in that case, you can make an argument, which is a pro-fly-by-wire argument, that this was a very, very rare thing. Whatever happened out there was rare. And far more pilots have far more airplanes have crashed because the pilot was, so deeply in the loop. I'm not going to quite make that argument because I really, I'm a pilot and I understand the essential role of the pilot in flight safety. So, I mean, I think you could get really start talking in with exaggerated, bombastic statements, and I'm not going to do that. I would say that as far as that mysterious Air France flight goes, wait, and maybe we'll have to wait our entire lifetime. But right now, don't jump to conclusions because it just doesn't make sense to do it. We don't have enough information.
Fly-by-wire is part of a technological development that is leading more and more, and you cite this in your book too, the best and brightest at the Air Force Academy are going not to fly fighter jets, but to fly drones.
Oh, now we get to that. I mean, now we're talking about a pilotless airplane. Sure. I mean, one can imagine. I mean, technically, it's certainly possible to create airliners that don't have pilots. And we have, this is not that difficult to do anymore. Obviously, that's not going to happen. And there are a variety of reasons why that's not going to happen. So we're not going to be have the United Predator flight from New York to San Francisco. And I think it's pretty obvious.
All right. Let's see if we can go next to this is Joe. Joe's with us from Harkers Island in North Carolina.
Hello.
Go ahead, Joe.
Yes. 40 years in aviation, 11 military and 29 commercial. As far as the Hudson incident, I think the day was made when he decided to actually go for a water landing rather than going with the suggestion of Teterboro or returning to LaGuardia. I think once he made that decision from that point on, almost any pilot could have managed the water landing. As far as the fly-by-wire, maybe a good system for high-performance fighters, but in transports, not required, and like you just mentioned about the one that went into the Atlantic out of Brazil. They never will know what happened to that one. But you get to a point to where, if you can always end up on manual reversion, in other words, manually fly the airplane as a last resort, you're going to have a good chance of survival.
Well, that's at the center of the sort of, there are two philosophies for fly-by-wire, and Boeing now is producing fly-by-wire airplanes also, but they allow the pilots to override the protections, and Airbus does not allow the pilots to override the protections, and the argument about that back and forth is reasonable on both sides, and it's fully explained in the book here with Ziegler, of course, the proponent of no override, and Boeing the proponent of override.
Yeah.
This is understandable. These are the protections, you know. The 99.999% of fly-by-wire is not about protections. It's about the ability to iron out things like the fugoid oscillation. It's like auto trim. It's like auto rudder and coordination. I mean, these things. I mean, the actual day-to-day handling characteristics of the airplane and the effect that has on the pilot. So, or the pilots, which is a positive effect. And I think nobody argues about that, which is, again, why one of the reasons why Boeing also has now gone to fly-by-wire.
Let's go back 727 days. Even in an airplane such as that...
Joe, I hate to cut you off, but we need to give some other people a chance.
Okay.
All right. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks very much. We're talking with William Langevicia about his new book, Fly-by-Wire, The Geese That Glide, The Miracle on the Hudson. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to Roger. Roger with us from Anchorage.
Yes, hello there.
All right, go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, just a couple of quick comments. I've flown the Airbus, the A320, as captain for about 4,500 hours. And I guess total on the 737 is probably about 7,000 or 8,000 hours. So I'm kind of familiar with both. And I just think that the way that Airbus has done things, they certainly have not pilot-proofed an airplane, but they just make it virtually impossible for so many common mistakes that are made to be made. And I flew the Airbus for 8 years, and then 2 years ago changed jobs and I'm flying the new generation 737s. And I can't, every day I see a mistake made that it just, you couldn't do it in an Airbus. And I was very surprised at how much I actually missed that airplane, but they make a good product, and I'm looking forward to checking out your guest's book.
Mm-hmm. When you say, I know William Langevicia wants to get in, but when you say mistakes made, are these, critical mistakes?
Well, they have the potential to be critical. They're distractors, you know. They take your attention. On an Airbus, when you enter the approach to be flown into the computer, it automatically tunes the correct frequency and sets the correct course. Well, the Boeing doesn't do that, so it's possible for you to,
get it wrong, yeah.
To get it wrong or to forget to do it, with other distractions. And there are just many, many things like that, it takes care of you. It looks out for you. And the fly-by-wire stuff is great in a very high-performance situation, which a typical airline pilot never gets into in his career, but all you got to do is, with the Airbus, is pull back. Mm-hmm. You just say, give me all you've got, and the airplane generally does that, whereas with the Boeing, in a wind shear, high-performance maneuver, it's much more dependent upon pilot skill to extract, the maximum amount of performance out of the airplane, and some guys have that skill, some people don't. And, the Airbus says, okay, I'll give you all that I can, and usually it works pretty darn well.
William Langevicia.
It's an interesting point you just made, because that this question of snatching the stick, as they call it, pulling the stick back in an emergency, this is one small corner of possible emergency maneuvers, as you know. Ziegler told me, the designer told me, that they had done studies in Airbus way back when. He's an elderly guy now, and had found that of the line pilots internationally, globally, they tested, that about 10% of the pilots could extract absolute maximum performance out of a conventional design. They had an Airbus rigged up without protections, basically, and without conventional. About 10% of airline pilots could do that. About 90% couldn't. About 100% thought they could. according to Ziegler, because they never get to this situation. And it's one of the problems, and it's nothing against, you know, pilots, but, I mean, how do you assess yourself in an environment or at an edge where you really have never been and you're not going to go? What he said with his Airbus design, this was part of his philosophy, was that he would be able to give 100% maximum performance to 100% of the pilots. So, again, a little controversial, but that is in this book as well.
Roger, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, guys. Bye.
And William Longavisha, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
William Longavisha, international editor for Vanity Fair, with us from the studios at the University of California at Davis. His book is called Fly-By-Wire.